Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Algebris podcast. Today we have Alberto Gallo, manager of the Macro Credit Fund, and Sebastiano Pirro, manager of the Financial Credit Fund, to talk about what is going on and our views on the world. Let's start with you, Alberto. Where do you think we are with COVID? Is this going to be a U-shaped or a V-shaped recession? How long? How deep?
It is definitely a very deep economic blackout. However, the average duration of recessions in the United States, for example, is 22 months. In this case, we are facing something which is deeper and shorter in duration, potentially 3 to 6 months. So the question is to understand the duration and also how will we return to normal? Will we return to 70, 80 or 90% activity after the containment measures work? Or will we return to a lower level of activity? Now, we have evidence from China that the duration is around 3-4 months and that Chinese areas, even the worst hit by the virus, have come back to around 80% of activity with some precautionary measures. People are wearing masks, there is distancing and so on. Obviously, some sectors are hit harder than others. In Italy and Spain, the numbers are stabilizing, the contagion and death numbers are stabilizing. However, we still don't have a plan for a recovery. But generally speaking, we see this second quarter of 2020 as a very deep economic contraction. However, a more brief economic contraction than you would have in a recession. Therefore, it's extremely important to understand how much permanent damage the economy is going to suffer. And in that view, the policy response from governments and central banks, which is aimed at containing this permanent damage.
Can we afford the big bazookas that everybody is putting in place? And again, a slightly different question. What about the moral aspect? So many unemployed, plus 10 million in the US, relative to the to having saved people's lives. How will society change to that?
There is there's a lot of very long-term questions here. One is, can we afford the spending that governments are implementing now? And the answer is we will come back at the end of this crisis. We will return to normality, but or semi-normality, but with very high levels of debt to GDP. The US is obviously able to afford a large amount of spending, and they've implemented a $2.2 trillion spending plan, half of which is aimed at individuals and supporting individuals that don't have income, and also supporting small businesses. In the Eurozone, so that's over 10% of GDP. In the Eurozone, the numbers are a bit lower and they vary between 2 and 5%. However, we still have to see a common response from the Eurogroup. So that is on the fiscal side. Central banks have dropped all of their taboos and have been supporting governments by buying an increasingly higher amount of government debt with the Fed, the Fed's program, currently around planning to buy $1 trillion in 2020, but potentially this is an amount that can go up to five times. And it includes also corporate debt for the first time. The ECB has also put on the table 1 trillion euros of purchases with the pandemic emergency purchase program. So there is a very strong joint monetary and fiscal stimulus. Having said that, there may be areas which benefit more than others, and areas where the checks and the grants don't arrive on time. So we're monitoring very carefully the timing for SMEs and people, the timing that it takes to apply to receive the money. In the countries, some countries are more prepared. In Germany, freelancers have already received 5,000 euro checks in their accounts. In the United States, some states have old technology to process claims, so it's taking longer for people to receive checks. In Europe here, there is one advantage, which is that labor laws are a bit less flexible, and it works both ways. In an expansion, it hinders the expansion, but in a recession, it smooths the unemployment path. There's also more automatic shock absorbers, more indemnities for people that are unemployed to receive a salary in Europe compared to the US. So here we are seeing a little bit more resilience in Europe. Well, in the US, we've seen unemployment rates going up. The last jobless claims was over 6 million. The previous one was over 3 million. So we are going to see at a high double-digit unemployment rate at the peak of this crisis. Having said that, the crisis is very deep, but the policy response has gone way beyond what we would have imagined. In 2008, the policy response was aimed at Wall Street. It was a financial crisis, and central banks bought a lot of assets. We ended up in a decade where asset prices went up, but wages remained more or less the same. This is a real economy crisis. We have a very strong response aimed at the real economy, at individuals and small businesses, which should reduce the permanent loss of output, the economic fallout from the crisis. It will also have collateral effects. As you pointed out, we'll end up with France at over 100% of debt to GDP, with Italy potentially around 150% of debt to GDP. And today, the Bank of England just announced that they are going to essentially give money to the Treasury without the Treasury having to issue bonds. So they're going to hand directly cash that they print to the Treasury for spending. So this is essentially entering monetary financing, which is something that we didn't see for decades. Eventually, we'll have higher inflation because of the policy focus on wages, on Main Street, coming after a decade where, Wall Street got essentially very well off after the last crisis and after the stimulus, and Main Street remained behind. Here we have the reverse.
What do you think will be the impact on markets given these enormous stimuluses that you've talked about? What is your view on the path that markets might take?
So we've been cautious before the sell-off. We are now a bit more optimistic, especially in credit. If you think about the way policy is going, markets are becoming more and more an instrument of the political economy here, with President Trump looking a lot at equity prices, with governments potentially not only injecting liquidity, so funding, but also equity into companies. Daimler, Volkswagen, TUI, a lot of German companies are getting credit lines. In the US, the same is happening for small businesses, but also large firms. There is a discussion about not just debt and liquidity provisions, so not just loans, but also equity injections. And this will come with potentially some restrictions on dividends or shareholder-friendly activity. So we're going from a situation where markets were very wild. There were a lot of buybacks. We were in a complete free market capitalism supported by central banks, in a slightly more state-driven capitalism here, where governments take gradually a bigger hand into the way markets function. And in our view, this is credit positive because, especially for the large companies and banks in the economy, countries will want to safeguard the largest telecoms, the largest utilities and banks in the country, and also the largest employers. So we don't know whether we are in a very strong recovery. Our view is that we're in a U-shaped recovery. The market will be bumpy and volatile, but we know that governments will support certain industries, and especially on the bond side, on the credit side. We also know that the push to monetary financing, modern monetary theory, central banks expanding balance sheets, and also checks to individuals, loans to SMEs, could eventually create some inflation. Today, demand is very low, but it could eventually create some inflation. So government debt doesn't look like a very good a very good investment going forward at the current level of yields. The New York Fed published an article discussing how the Fed controlled long-term yields in World War II. So we could even have a policy of, this is just a proposal, but we could have a policy of yield curve control. So you'll definitely get less than inflation on government debt. You have potentially a lot more volatility in equity. On a risk-adjusted basis, credit looks like a much better bet in our view here.
Moving on to European banks, Seb, what is your view? The dividends have been stopped. The additional tier ones, which is one of your favorite investments, they are may pay. Will they continue to pay coupons, do you think, given the dividend suspension? The million-dollar question.
So the banking sector, as Alberto was mentioning before, the banking sector is one which is, you know, we need to put what is happening into context. And this is not a human-driven kind of recession. This is a natural catastrophe. So it's like an earthquake. The policy measures that have been put in place, especially on the political front, go quite far in shielding the losses to the banking sector. There have been handouts to the population, and there have been direct guarantees on loans, both old and new loans. The response varies country by country, but basically, in a lot of cases, there is a substantial shield on loan losses for the next few months. And that basically means that the banking sector is really being protected into this. So as far as it stands, I think we need to put this into context. So first of all, fundamentally, we have the highest and the best starting point that we ever had in, you know, approaching a downturn in the banking sector. Capital ratios have almost tripled since the previous crisis. And if we think about, you know, a typical measure of the bank asset quality or health quality, would be bad loans on total assets, and they are the lowest ever, both in Europe and in the US. So the starting point is strong. As you correctly point out, you know, right now we stress test all of our banks, and we use the EBA stress tests and the Fed stress tests to be able to replicate bank by bank those losses. The scenarios are harsh and do not consider any government support, but if you look at that and you net it with the measures that have been put in place, you almost struggle to get at the end of the year in a loss-making positions pretty much for all of the issuers that we hold. Now, what we don't know is how long this goes on. So to put in context, the dividend measures that have been taken, there's a reason for that. The reason is that banks are ultimately receiving state support. Not directly, they're not receiving any cash, and their businesses remain profitable. However, their clients do. And so if these measures were not in place, we would have to expect a big pickup in non-performing loans and a deterioration in asset quality, most likely. This is being shielded, and hence the banks, from a political perspective, have been forced or asked not to pay dividends for the time being and to suspend them. Now, going forward, there is zero intention to do this, to extend this to the credit side, and the capital buffers, if anything, have received a bump. So if you take a bank like Intesa, given the fact they're not distributing any dividend for 2019, their capital is going to go up by 100 basis points, which, having already one of the highest capital buffers within Europe, it's quite substantial, and it gives us a cushion for any potential losses that we have not seen or we're not seeing today, which is huge from this perspective. So coupons are we have a very strong visibility around fundamentals, and we think that right now possibility of not paying a coupon is around 0%. So, you know, to answer to your question.
Excellent. I think that is very good. So how are you positioned to take advantage of this? And then Alberto, you might want to give your positioning to look at the opportunity set today.
So for us, positioning has been quite conservative getting into this. We had we had basically the most conservative positioning that we ever had going into a sell-off, mainly because we were looking at China and studying the economic implications of that. And then when cases started to spread to Italy, we realized that this was a, you know, a global phenomenon and not something localized within each country. So we also have benefited some substantial hedging. So we have mitigated what we could in this large dislocation. However, we also have used the trough to add quite aggressively because the fundamental picture was strong and became even stronger with all the measures that have been put in place. And now risk reward is among the most favorable that we have ever had. So we are long and we think, you know, first of all, you know, the market is going to continue to improve. Liquidity is going to continue to become better. We will settle around much wider spreads given the uncertainty around the duration of this measure. But the sell-off, you know, looks, you know, has been really, really steep. You know, spreads have almost tripled just in additional tier ones, more than tripled. And I think that we'll settle, you know, just about wider than the long-term average. But that means that we're going to retrace quite a bit further from here. So we maintain a long position. We maintain, you know, a small cash buffer just in case. However, we think that, you know, we have a very strong conviction for the next 6 months from here.
So spreads widened, opportunity to get in now is higher than the long-term average for additional tier ones and zero chance of not paying a coupon. That seems very attractive. What about you, Alberto? Where do you see attractiveness in your space?
So, Alex, we were cautious on the market in February and January. And in February, we wrote a silver bullet called Nothing Left to Buy. We put the portfolio, a large part of the portfolio, over 50% in cash. And we were cautious on the virus. We did not expect this to be as deep as 2008. But suddenly in March, also given the unwind of very levered funds in the hedge fund space, the sell-off was compounded to create value to lower prices, even in very good quality assets. And so we took advantage of that and we invested the fund up to 70-75%, adding in assets which are solid companies that are strategic and can resist even in a prolonged shutdown. For example, telecom companies like Vodafone or Telefonica, utilities like Enel, large systemic banks in the senior or the lower tier two like SocGen, Barclays, ING, for example, Citigroup in the US, General Electric across the US industrials. And so we have improved the quality of our portfolio, and we think that the central bank's stimulus will continue to support investment grade credit and also things that are close to investment grade credit. We are not at the moment going into emerging markets. We see more weaknesses there, but there are areas where credit is still cheap across cyclical industries, which also will get support from governments. For example, in the auto sector, in the energy sector, we can see a disruption, but large firms like Petrobras or Pemex are likely to survive in our view. So we see a good number of opportunities around the world in strategic firms and banks which will get sovereign support. We have deployed a good amount of our capital. We think this is a good time to enter credit. We also think it's a good time to go into an active strategy which is able to profit to rotate the book, to be flexible and to profit from occasional companies or sovereigns that are unable to survive, like in our case where we have been closing some shorts in March in companies that got hurt a lot. So we have added, we think the market will be bumpy, but as Seb said before, for a patient investors, there is an opportunity to generate very good returns in credit if you start now.
So to summarize, if I can, higher quality portfolio, higher quality names, moving into the investment grade space without compromising on yield. And with the support that's going around with the bazookas, this should be a very good time to get in for a long-term investor. I think that's very clear. Thank you both. Thank you for your time. And we'll be back with the next podcast soon.